So we're here today with Zach Dembo, who is running for Congress to take Andy Barr's place. Zach, welcome to Moving Kentucky Forward.
Thanks, Bruce. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I'm glad to. This has turned into quite a race. Sherlyn Stevens announced early, and I thought was going to just be the de facto nominee, and then here comes you and Aaron Petrie and David Kloiber, and we've got a race. I mean, it's quite a thing. I was fascinated to read your bio. This is quite an interesting life story you've got going here. So you were a JAG, and then, but you, wait a minute, you started out teaching, right? You
That's
taught
right.
in Mississippi, which I think has got to give you a whole set of insights that other people may not have. And then you spent time in the Navy doing the JAG thing, got your law degree. So why did you went and worked for the governor as his policy advisor? Is that correct?
That's correct. Yes, I started out as Governor Andy Beshear's policy advisor and ultimately was his legislative director. But I started off as his policy advisor.
That legislative director for Andy Beshear with this legislature, that's got to be just all sorts of fun. We could talk about that at some point. So you've got this job with Beshear, and then you left there and you went back into law work, doing prosecutor work. So why did you decide to stop all of that and run for Congress?
That's a great question, Bruce. And it was certainly not something I expected or planned for. As you laid out, kind of my whole career has been public service. I appreciate the insight you gave about teaching in rural Mississippi, but that's where I really caught the bug of public service and of standing up for folks. And that's what I've been doing in a very nonpartisan civil servant manner my entire career. And so you're right that the only reason I left Governor Beshear's staff, it was an honor to serve, was to be a federal prosecutor in my hometown of Lexington, where I was prosecuting federal felonies all over the Eastern District of Kentucky. Amazing job, and what I thought would be the last job I would ever need, because so many people get those jobs and stay in them until they retire. And that was my plan too. What I couldn't have anticipated is just how politicized and weaponized this Trump administration would make the Department of Justice. And so I thought, having been a civil servant, I served on active duty under President Obama. I served as a federal prosecutor in the first Trump administration, but as a civil servant. And then I served as a federal prosecutor under President Biden. And so I thought, having seen administrations change, I knew how it worked and that whatever went on in DC wouldn't trickle down and affect my ability to pursue justice. Unfortunately, I'm sure you've read a lot of the same headlines I have. The Trump administration has turned the Department of Justice into the president's personal law firm. And unfortunately, it's not representing the American people. And while I still have a lot of friends who are federal prosecutors and FBI agents doing really great work under difficult circumstances, for me, when it became clear that the oath I swore to the Constitution was being supplanted with an oath to one man, I knew I had to resign. And so in May, I submitted my resignation and walked away from 11 years of federal service. And that was very unexpected. And so then the question was, how do I keep helping people? How do I keep serving the American people and the people of Kentucky as I've always tried to do? And that's why I got in. But you're absolutely right that it was not something that I'd anticipated.
So when you started making this decision, started thinking about this, what did your family and friends say, first of all? And secondly, what did Governor Beshear say, if I assume you spoke with him?
Sure. That's a great question, actually. You start to get some of the same questions, and no one's yet asked, what did my friends and family say? To be honest, most of the feedback was they understood why I was resigning. But I think a lot of my friends and family, frankly, like myself, are pretty disillusioned with DC right now and pretty disillusioned with politics. And frankly, pretty disillusioned with both parties. Now, obviously, what the elected Republicans are doing in Congress is terrible, but there's also a sense that the elected Democrats created an environment where someone like Trump could get reelected despite what he did his first term. And so there was a little bit of, is this really the best use of your time and your talents? And you know, what I told them is hopefully someone as a first time, fresh face, new ideas can try to change that just a little bit. And rather than being, you know, kind of a career politician running for re-election, like for example, Andy Barr, who opened this seat because of his continued political ambition, maybe just maybe a young guy who's spent his career in public service is going to come at it from a different approach and change that a little bit. I also did speak with Governor Beshear. Obviously, as the only politician I've ever worked for, it was important for me to reach out to him. He was encouraging. He told me that he's committed to flipping this seat and that he thinks there's a lot of energy for it. And I got to say, since I've seen him on the trail and since then, his excitement about our ability to flip this seat this cycle has only increased because of what's going on nationally and seeing those elections in Virginia and New Jersey. So he, I think, is very encouraged by our ability to get another Democrat in Congress representing Kentucky.
I would agree with the excitement around flipping it. I think that that district is one of the prime races for Democrats in 26. So I'm very excited about it, and I'm excited about the candidates. I have interviewed, or this will be the third interview of the four. I still have to contact Mr. Kloiber and set that one up. But I've just been so impressed with all of the candidates. And I'm impressed with the fact that all of them seem to be really focused on serving the people of that district. So let me ask you some basic campaigny kind of questions. First of all, you got into this in the summer, and you've not done this before. You're new at this campaign thing. So do you have staff? Do you have a campaign director? Have you hired people? And how's your volunteers looking?
Yeah, so great question. This is all new to me. I initially, to keep things very lean and making sure that we were focused on having as much resources as possible to get the message out, whether through ads or the ground game, hired someone to be a finance director. And we just recently hired a campaign manager. She actually won one of those House of Delegates races in Virginia that were such a big groundswell for the Democrats. And so, based on that experience, where she managed a successful campaign for the House of Delegates and had quite a success and a big budget, we hired her, and she's going to get on the ground very soon. So I'm excited to be working with her. Volunteer-wise, you know, we have a running list. We have every time we have events, and I think tonight we're having an event in town, and I think by my count, it will be the 25th. I could be off on that one way or the other. But, you know, it's gone from people that I knew socially or as friends from growing up in Lexington, this is my hometown, to their friends, to those friends of friends. So we've really continued to expand it out. And at every event, we have a sign-up sheet where people check if they want to volunteer. And at every event, people have been checking it. And so I think, based on what I understand, it's a little early to be getting out and knocking on doors and putting out yard signs. But I'm excited about doing it. And I think I'm going to have a great team doing it with me.
Well, that leads right to my next question, which was, have you done any door knocking yet? It sounds like you have not.
No, I haven't. I've done plenty of community meetings in all of the 16 counties, but you know, and people can differ on this. What I'm noticing from these community meetings is unless they're really, really tuned in to Democratic politics, this is not yet front of mind in the off year. So I'm thinking what I want to do is have the most possible impact. The other thing I'll add is, unlike, say, a state race, you know, this district is 770,000 people. And so while door knocking is important, I think it has to be done strategically. And given that there aren't polls in the field, for example, I'm worried that if I were going to go out and door knock right now, it would not be the way that would have the best return in terms of contacting people who are likely to be voters in this cycle, because things are constantly changing. And I think, frankly, those election results in Virginia and New Jersey are also something that needs us to, that makes us reevaluate, because there may be doors that you should knock now that you might not have thought you should knock before. So with the constantly changing environment, I think I'd like to see more data before we start committing folks and volunteers to do it. But I'm excited to do it. I've loved going out and meeting with all these folks in these community meetings. We've been out there meeting a lot of people. We just haven't started showing up on their doorstep yet.
One more sort of in the weeds question, and then I want to chase something else. So you're not doing the door knocking. You're obviously raising money because I checked your FEC report, and was surprised. I mean, honestly, I was surprised to see how close some of the fundraising was in this district, because, Sherlyn Stevenson's been there a long time and has run before and so on and so forth, and yet everybody seems to be really, knocking it out of the park in terms of raising money. So that's great. What about mailers and name recognition ads? Have you started any of that yet?
Yeah, great question. And I'm glad you looked at the FEC reports. Obviously, I wish we were in a system, especially I wish we were in a system where Citizens United had not come down. I
Oh,
wish we
yes.
were in a system where money was not such a decider. But unfortunately, what I've learned after getting in is it really is. And it's just, there's no way a campaign can succeed without it. And so that's why, thanks to the hard work we did last quarter, I was proud to outraise the rest of the Democratic field combined. If you look at the raise numbers from all of the other Democratic candidates added up, we raised more than all of them combined. The reason that was important to me is obviously, as a first-time candidate, as you bring up, there can be concerns, there can be thoughts about, is this person viable? And I wanted to make very clear that we have a professional and hardworking organization that's going to be able to do what it takes to flip the seat. To that end, again, no, we've not started. The only thing I've been spending that campaign money on, you may notice, we raised 290. We spent only about 60,000, and that was also deliberate because, in my view, we want to keep our powder dry for the 4 to 3 months before the primary, really ideally the 45-day window when you get the more favorable rate for TV ads. But so no, we've not sent out mailers, we've not sent out any ads yet. We've done a couple of Facebook ads, but not in the volume and frequency that we intend to do that in the spring. And I just think there's, this is, it's always a changing environment, but these days the news cycle is just so chaotic because of what's coming out of DC. My worry is if we focus on an issue now, it's not going to be evergreen. And something that seems like a real problem now might go away. But more importantly, given how this administration, this Congress works, there's probably something we haven't even thought of that's going to end up being a huge issue in a couple of months. I mean, Venezuela being threatened with regime change, basically, and extrajudicial killings of people in boats is not something I would have predicted we'd be talking about now, but that's what's going on now. And I'm quite sure come February or March, it's going to be something else. And so to make sure we're getting the maximum impact and reaching people and talking about what matters to them coming out of DC, I also think it makes sense to keep your powder dry a little longer.
Very interesting take, very strategic, it seems to me, in terms of the way you're planning your campaign. I'll be interested to see how that works because a lot of people will tell you, no, you start door knocking as soon as you declare. So I'll be interested to see how this goes. So let's leave the campaign for a minute and let's talk about you and what's in your heart. You got into the race. Obviously, you've had direct experience with this train wreck of an administration. and you've had direct experience with the politicization of the DOJ. So I'm sure that's an issue for you. But outside of that, what do you see as the big issues that you need to talk about or that you need to listen about in this district?
Well, so first of all, Bruce, I'm glad you used the term listen because that is the first thing I've been doing in all of these discussions. And when I've been sitting down with business leaders or healthcare leaders, I had a great call the other day with the head of the Marquee Cancer Center. I've spoken with a local business owner here in town that does about 50 to 60 employees usually. I've spoken with the mayors of some of the towns in the district. There's a lot to learn for anyone running for this for the first time, and I want to make sure that I'm learning what's important to them. It has been affirming because what's important to most of these folks is exactly what I would want to talk about anyways, which is what I learned from Governor Beshear, which is what you need to focus on is what's going to help people the most. And what they're thinking about when they wake up, not what we're thinking about, or more importantly, not what MSNBC or Fox is telling us to think about. And those are affordability, healthcare, and having safe communities. And so that would have been what I want to focus on anyways. But I got to say, affordability just continues to be a crisis. These tariffs that Congress has just allowed the president to put in, I think in contravention of checks and balances in the Constitution, are continuing to hurt people, especially right here in the 6th District. I know that the biggest manufacturing plant for Toyota in the world is in the 6th District. They just announced a $10 billion loss due to these tariffs. My family, I come from nine generations of farmers, and my mom was the first in her family to go to college, but my uncle and cousins still farm. They've been farming soybeans. Soybeans have been hit very, very hard by these tariffs, and it's still unclear if China is going to be buying what they've been harvesting. So people are hurting here in the sixth price-wise. And if that weren't bad enough, these Medicaid cuts are going to decimate our healthcare industry and people's access to care. And so when I'm out in Fleming County, I make sure to stop by the Fleming County Hospital. When I'm in Estill County, I make sure to talk about Markham and Wallace, that hospital. There are six rural hospitals in the district that are on the chopping block because of these Medicaid cuts. And so that's another thing that I want to be sure to focus on. First of all, of course, because these are such important places for folks to get health care in their communities, but also they're huge job creators. I mean, in a lot of these communities, along with the schools, they're one of the biggest employers. And so it's going to decimate the economy if they go under. I really hope that's not the case. So that's what I focus on. And then, of course, everyone wants to live in a safe community. I spent a lot of my career making sure that crime was addressed and that people who committed crimes were brought to justice. And that's something else that I focus on as well. But those three things, obviously, there are lots of other things I'm passionate about, including, as you say, the Constitution and due process and rule of law, but those are the three things I focus on the most.
So, have you had any contact with anybody in DC about your campaign, either leadership or other congress folks or anybody like that?
Yes. So, one of the first people that I talked with, in addition to the governor, was Congressman Morgan McGarvey, the Louisville congressman. He and I knew each other from when I worked for Governor Beshear, and so I wanted to be sure to reach out and get his advice. And he has been, as always, since I've known him, a great source of advice and a good model to follow and think about. Since then, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, which is the organization dedicated to flipping the House, did a candidate week in which they invited me to attend. And I was there and met, numerous folks, leadership, other congresspeople, other organizations. And the main thing I was telling them was, just as you were saying, this is a winnable race. This is something where if we have the right messenger and the right message, we can absolutely flip this seat. But it's going to take everyone. It's going to take everyone in this district. It's going to take everyone in this state. We just had our first Louisville event the other night, and I was telling the folks there, If you want Morgan to not be the only congressman who's a Democrat, we need Louisville on board. And frankly, it's going to take a lot of folks nationally. And so I was just trying to educate them and make the pitch for why we can flip this district and why I'm the person to do it.
So you mentioned Candidate Week. I know Sherrilyn Stevenson went. Were the other, did you see the other two, Aaron Petrie and Kloiber? Were they there?
I didn't know. To my knowledge, Ms. Stevenson and I were the only two who received an invitation. And that's not unusual. There were multiple districts. They only invited some of the folks in the primaries, but to my knowledge, it was just myself and Ms. Stevenson.
Okay. Well, speaking of that, have you spoken with any of the other candidates?
Yes. So before I got in, I had heard through the grapevine that Sherrilyn Stevenson and David Kloiber were going to be getting in. And it was important to me, especially since I'm doing this for the first time, to sit down with both of them separately. We didn't sit down together, but sit down with both of them and just get to know them a little bit and also talk about why I was getting in and hear a little bit about them. I admire anyone who's willing to put their name on a ballot. And so it was important for me to sit down and make sure I knew the humans behind these folks, and that while we're all in the race and only one of us can become the nominee, to make sure that we start building those relationships early. And obviously, I got in because I think I'm the one who has the best shot to flip the seat. But I'll tell you, and I'll commit to anyone publicly, one thing that I told both of them is if for some reason voters feel a different way and someone else is the nominee, I will turn right back around and work as hard as I can for whoever that nominee is to flip the seat because we need everyone on board. But I was able to have a good conversation with them. Erin got in much later, and so I've gotten to see her at events. We've not had any discussions because I did these sit downs in May or June, and I think Erin was still living in Washington at the time. I haven't had a chance to have that discussion with her, but I did enjoy talking with both of them.
Excellent. That's very encouraging because the last thing we need is a knockdown drag out primary for this seat. I'm really encouraged to hear you say that. How about the local Democrats? We have had some problems in the state, which you may not have been aware of, but now you probably are, with the Democratic Party organization not necessarily being as strong as we would like. And local Democratic Party organizations maybe not being as strong as we li would like. I do know the Fayette County Democratic Party is very strong and does good work. Have you been able to talk to the county party leaders in your district, and how are they, what's their response been?
Yeah, I have. And that was a priority for me, especially since, obviously Lexington is important and Fayette is important, but I also grew up here and I worked here. And so of the counties, other than maybe Garrard, where my parents live, that's probably the county I know the most. So it was important to me to get out to all these other counties. So I've been out to, I think, 14 of the 16 Democratic parties. One, there's been a scheduling issue, and the other I've had trouble getting in touch with. But generally speaking, I've been out and spoken to the executive committees or the larger body meetings of all of them. Some are larger than others. Garrard, where my parents live, unfortunately, had not had a party organization for a while, but they already started to reorganize one a couple of months ago. And Garrard is a small county. And it does not have, based on election results, a huge number of Democrats. But the fact that a small county like Garrard, one of the smallest in the district by population, would have the energy to, of their own accord, start organizing a Democratic Party after it being defunct, I think speaks to the excitement of this moment. The other thing I'll say is attendance has been much higher than I've been either expecting or even sometimes the chair would tell me. They'd say, oh, we may have 5 or 10, and there'll be 15 or 20, or they'll say, we'll have 15 or 20, and they'll have 30 or 40. There is a lot of excitement out there. And I got to say, our county party chairs are doing the work. There's been a lot of early organizing, early canvassing. There was a great dinner that the Clark, Powell, and Montgomery Democrats put on in honor of late Senator Wendell Ford. And the attendance there, I think there were over 200 Dems in that room, and it was just a great effort. So I think our chairs, our local chairs, are recognize the moment we have, and they're already doing the work to organize.
That's great. Everything you're telling me is so encouraging, and I'm really glad to hear it. This is good stuff. So let me ask you two final questions. One is there anything you wanted to talk about that I haven't asked you about?
You know, the only thing that I just want to talk about a little bit is, and you hit on this a little bit with my teaching, and that it would give me a unique perspective, is just how much I care about the folks of Kentucky and just how much I want to fight for them. And I bring that up not because of me, but just because of the people I've been able to fight for. I'm thinking of my students in Mississippi, some of whom got to me in eighth grade who couldn't read. In eighth grade. And that was just so disheartening and shocking, but it was also so rewarding to try to fight for them to get the education they deserved. Or I'm thinking of sailors and Marines that I served with that I got to represent, standing up and fighting for them and learning about their backgrounds and the sacrifice they made. It is so humbling and it's such an amazing experience. And then finally, standing up for victims of crime, including many right here in Kentucky. It is obviously a big job to be a congressman and a huge honor. And it's only because of learning from all of those people that I got to listen to and I got to stand up and fight for that I'm in the position now where I'm able to be the right messenger for these times as we try to bring some common sense back to DC. So that would be the only thing I'd wanted to add.
Excellent. Thank you for sharing. So here's my final question. I ask every candidate I ever interview. So let's imagine that you are out door knocking. It's whenever that begins, sometime next year. And you come to my house and you're on my porch and I actually open the door, which would be unusual.
Yeah.
And I look at you and I say, "All right, Mr. Dembo, tell me why I should vote for you. What's your answer?"
My answer is that we need fresh, new faces who have a history of solving problems regardless of party. I think what we've seen clearly is that we have some toxic partisanship and an acknowledgement that DC has been failing the people of Central Kentucky for a long time. And so we need someone who has a track record of fixing issues and solving problems, no matter the party, and standing up and fighting for folks. And that's what we've been lacking in DC for so long. And I think, frankly, that's why so many people have been disgusted with DC and have either stopped voting or voted the way they voted recently. And so, just like my friends and family who kind of looked askance at me when I said I was going to do this, I would say the only way we can change this is by changing the playbook in terms of who we're electing. And so I would just ask for your support as a veteran, as a former prosecutor, and as a new face to politics.
Excellent. Zach Dembo, running for Congress in the 6th District. Thank you so much for your time and good luck with your campaign. We will check back in after the first of the year.
Thanks so much, Bruce. Appreciate you having me on.